Show. And this is not Mike Malloy. This is Johnny Wendell. Mike's ill. Mike called in sick at about noon today. We pulled it together out of thin air to create radio magic and mastery for you for the next 3 hours. As pompous as that sounds, every word of it is true. I am Johnny Wendell. Been on the show many, many times. You and I have been friends for the last year plus. We got tons of stuff to talk about. I can always be reached if you love or hate what you hear at tbcwra@aol.com. tbcwra@aol.com. Easy to remember. The Boston Celtics will rise again. Well, I'm going to have to change that because the will is not applicable anymore. They are world champions. The Boston Celtics WRA something. Win resoundingly again or something like that. But that's how you can reach me if you want to talk. And I answer all emails. And if you're a good little doobie, we'll even send you some songs or something. It was a bloodbath day in the American judiciary. I don't know how closely you have been following this story. It's the big story of the day. Three major decisions made by the judicial activists on the U.S. Supreme Court. I love that expression above and beyond any and other expression when it comes to talking about the jurists that sit in Washington, D.C., the mighty nine, our U.S. Supreme Court. Only nine. Remember, Roosevelt wanted to blow it up to, what, 15, 18 justices in the 1930s when he was enraged at them for killing the National Recovery Act. Too bad he didn't. Judicial activism. Judicial activism is a buzzword because you're going to hear it everywhere and anywhere. And judicial activism essentially means a bunch of judges that make decisions you don't like. That's what it is. That's nothing to do with interpretation of the Constitution, none of that stuff. But in reality today, if anything could be considered a judicial activism, it certainly were the three major decisions handed down today, the first of which kind of ridiculous. Apparently, a major reduction in the lawsuit against the Exxon Corporation and their sunken oil tanker, the Valdez, up in Alaska. I guess it went from $2 billion down to $500 million with one swoop of the mighty pen. How nice that the oil companies are able to get a $1.5 billion break out of those robed clowns in D.C. I don't even want to talk about that one. That's just, that raises my ire right through the roof. That makes me completely insane. So let's avoid that. There are two other major decisions, and the one that is eating up all of the oxygen in the newsosphere is that the Supreme Court outlawed the executions of people that are convicted of raping a child. That's right. The 5-4 vote, the court said that the Louisiana law that allows a death penalty to be imposed in such cases violates the Constitution's ban on cruel and unusual punishment. According to the majority opinion written by swing justice, Justice Anthony Kennedy, the death penalty is not a proportionate punishment for the rape of a child. His four liberal colleagues joined him, the four conservatives, Scalia, Thomas, his de facto factorum, Alito, Roberts, that's it. It's going to be 5-4 until one of these people retires or is replaced by Obama or McCain in 2009. I'm suspecting that if Senator Obama is elected, that Justice John Paul Stevens, who coincidentally is a Republican appointee, he is the most liberal person on the court, as these things are measured by a barometer. Stevens was appointed by Gerald Ford. Ford was no liberal. Stevens is approaching 90. if he hasn't made it there already, and he wants to get out. He may go to 94 or whatever if Arizona Senator John McCain assumes the presidency and becomes number 44. There has not been an execution in the United States for a crime that did not involve the death of a victim in 44 years. Now, what happened was a gentleman by the name of Patrick Kennedy, we presume no relation to Anthony Kennedy, probably would have to recuse himself in this case. Patrick Kennedy sentenced to death for the rape of his 8-year-old stepdaughter in Louisiana. He's one of two people, both in Louisiana, condemned to death for a rape not accompanied by a killing. The stepdaughter is still alive. And apparently, the decision is that there is a national consensus against capital punishment for the crime of child rape, says Kennedy. Now, Alito, who dissents, he said, the harm that's caused to the victims and to society at large by the worst child rapists is grave. It's the judgment of Louisiana lawmakers and those in an increasing number of other states that these harms justify the death penalty. I regard the abuse of children in any way, shape, and form to be the most despicable of non-capital crimes. But you have to underline and quote capital. These children are alive. Ergo, according to Kennedy's thinking, it would be disproportionate if you were to execute the rapist. I'm not so entirely sure I go along with this. Now, a matter of principle, and I may as well come right out and upfront with it, I oppose the death penalty. I believe it should be abolished. Not because it's cruel and unusual punishment, but the libertarian in me says giving the state the right to murder its citizens simply because the consecutiveness of the act applies in favor of the states. In other words, I kill somebody, I'm the first killer, the state kills me. They're the second killer. That's still killing. Just because I came first, I'm the one who draws the death penalty. That seems retarded to me. I'm sorry. That seems completely ridiculous. You can't claim something is wrong and then do it yourself. Unless, of course, you're Larry Craig. But that's another story for another time, of course. This is a peculiar decision. I recognize why Kennedy and the four allegedly liberal justices went the way that they did, but you can make a case and say that the death penalty, if it is extant, if it does exist, if its purpose is to eradicate a useless human being, assuming that's what you feel about certain human beings, that they are in fact useless, the rape of an 8-year-old certainly qualifies. That is an act that is so heinous and so brutal and so insane that you would never want somebody like that walking around free, nor would you want to be on the hook for 3 hots and a cot and universal health care for however many years the person lives. It's very simple. If you're going to have a death penalty, this is certainly a category I believe applies. Now, there are those who would say, look, they would have, in fact, I don't even need to quote Justice Kennedy again on this. I will quote Mario Puzo, the author of The Godfather. When Don Corleone was approached by Amerigo Bonasera, Bonasera's daughter was raped. Remember, it was the very first scene in the movie. I believe in America, he said. I want justice, Don Corleone. I want you to kill the rapists. I want you to kill the assaulters of my daughter. I want an eye for an eye. And Don Corleone, in his wisdom, said, you come here looking for justice, but your daughter is still alive. That's essentially what Kennedy is saying. The stepdaughter is still alive. Therefore, it is disproportionate and unbalanced to take the life of the creep that assaulted and raped her. Question is this. If we're going to have a death penalty, why does it have to be a capital crime? Isn't the destruction of an existing life acceptable? If not, shouldn't we get rid of the death penalty once and for all? We are at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. It would seem to me that if the death penalty, the proponents of the death penalty are forever saying that the death penalty is a deterrent. if the death penalty were more liberally applied, I don't mean in the political sense, I mean a more gratuitously applied, perhaps violent criminals would think twice. I don't go along with that. However, it would seem to me that if you were going to have this sort of remedy, why wouldn't it be applied to a crime as heinous as the rape of an 8-year-old? Where do you stand on this one? If you're going to have a death penalty, in my opinion, you got to use it for stuff like this. I think the Supreme Court was wrong. Either you abolish the thing and you get rid of it entirely, or you say it doesn't have to be a capital crime, only a heinous one. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. A conundrum in the evening here on what could be a sweltering summer night somewhere in America, or a rainy one. I don't know where you are. But you know something? I get the distinct feeling that I'm about to find out. We're at 800-989-1480. When we return, let's talk about this. Should the death penalty be universal for heinous crimes, or should it be abolished? The Supreme Court, in my opinion, punted. My name is Johnny Wendell. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Don't you dare go anywhere.
I see your soul, it's kind of gray. You see my heart, you look.
This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in. Mike's not feeling well today. Be here for another 2.5 hours. We are talking about the Supreme Court decision. They have outlawed the execution of people that are convicted of raping a child by a 5-4 vote. They have thrown out the idea that you can do this. Now, 45 states already ban the death penalty for any kind of rape, and the only 5 states that allow it for child rapists are Montana, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Texas. They allow executions in such cases if the defendant had previously been convicted of raping a child, like I guess it was a second offense, like the first one wasn't grievous enough. I understand where Justice Kennedy and the other 4 judges are coming from, but it seems to me that the idea that you have to produce a dead body before you can execute somebody for creating that dead body is ridiculous. There are some crimes that are heinous enough for society to say, listen, you have now given up your right to be among the existing. If this isn't the case, then get rid of the death penalty. Get rid of it. It doesn't work. It's not a deterrent. It doesn't work. The state becomes a murderer in and of itself. And if the state is making gray areas out of who it kills and who it does not kill, then there can never be justice. Do you think the Supreme Court made the right decision? I don't. We are at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. That is our number here.
Hello?
David.
Yes.
In Miami, you are on with Johnny.
Yeah, I essentially agree that the death penalty is wrong, but I think people overreact when it comes to issues of sex and children. People do, experience the tragedy of rape, being raped at a young age, and go on to have productive lives. The child's life is necessarily ruined. So
no, I recognize that, David. Not that particular child. You are right. Okay, there's no way to tell until someone does a study of someone's complete life as an overview. On the other hand, said child rapist goes and rapes some other child, that life could very well be ruined. Is this a chance you want to take? I cannot understand the logic behind that. Are there no crimes that are so heinous that they have to have the appendage of being capital crimes to be punished by execution? I don't get it. Life is sacred. The wreckage of a human life should be considered equal to the taking of a human life. Lisa, in Chicago, you're on with Johnny.
I'm an attorney in Chicago, and I represent abused and neglected children.
Right.
And I'm also anti-death penalty, and I see your point, because I see how heinous those crimes are and what they do to these kids.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the one thing you're not considering is that a lot of these kids feel guilt even though they're the victims. And when you kill the perpetrator of the abuse, that might add to those children's pain and their guilt, where they'll now feel also responsible for their father, stepfather, or whoever it is, being murdered by the state.
I recognize that, and I understand your point, and it's a very, very good one, Lisa. The thing is, it's identical to the situation we discussed in the prior call. That may be one result that you have, but by the same token, if child rapist does it again, the second or third time, the affection for the abuser idea may not be, it may not be pertinent, it may not be relevant. Would it be so bad? For example, rape does not also does not necessarily draw a life sentence. Would it have made more sense in the Supreme Court decision to say that if Louisiana's law must be thrown out, it can be legally replaced with an automatic life sentence for a child rapist? That would make sense to me, too. You are not going to have the opportunity to rape if you're stuck behind bars for the rest of your natural life. Nathan, in Long Beach, you're on with Johnny.
Hey, Johnny, how are you?
What do you think, man?
I think that, first of all, the Supreme Court made a bad decision today.
Agreed.
Rape of a child, or rape of anybody at that matter, my personal opinion, is a heinous crime.
Of course.
It deserves that type of punishment. I would be for the death penalty for rape, period.
I wouldn't, because when you talk about sex between adults, adults have second thoughts, adults change their minds. Sex between an adult and a child, you're not on an even playing field. It can't be considered with the same gravity, Nathan. That was not the only decision that the U.S. Supreme Court made today. They made another Lollapalooza of a decision. This one has me completely scratching my head. And these guys claim that judicial activism is bad. You're going to have to stay tuned to hear how ridiculous this next decision was, because this one is blowing my mind. Johnny Wendell, in for the ailing Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. You can always call us at 800-989-1480. We'll take your call. Just one thing, though. Don't go away. The Mike Malloy Show. Johnny Wendell in for the ailing Mike Malloy. Mike not feeling well today. I am here in his stead for the next 2.5 hours. Love doing the show. Y'all may be the best of radio people anybody could ever ask for, because you care, because you're informed. And anytime you want to talk to me, I can be reached at tbcwra@aol.com. tbcwra@aol.com. Johnny Wendell. U.S. Supreme Court basically threw out a Louisiana law allowing the death penalty to be imposed on charges of child rape. I'm not entirely sure I agree with this, and I don't care. I don't care for. Loathe the death penalty. Loathe giving the government that kind of power. But if you do, the idea that a dead body has to be attached to the application of the death penalty, I don't get that. I don't play that. I just think that's ridiculous. Harder to understand for me is another decision that the USSC made today that I just don't grasp. They reversed a Los Angeles man's murder conviction, Giles versus California. What happened was they dealt a setback to prosecutors in domestic violence cases today, ruling that a murder victim's earlier reports to the police may not be used against the accused killer at his trial unless it can be shown he intended to silence her as a witness. Now, this is what happened. They overturned the murder conviction of an L.A. man who shot and killed his girlfriend. He said he acted in self-defense, but he was convicted after the jury heard a police officer's report that the girlfriend said he threatened to kill her. In today's decision, Antonin Scalia said the use of the police report violated the accused's right to confront his accusers in court, which is in the Sixth Amendment of the Constitution. It says, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to be confronted with the witnesses against him. We decline to approve an exception to the Constitution, the Confrontation Clause, unheard of at the time of the founding, or 200 years after, said Scalia. Now, the dissenters were Anthony Kennedy, Stevens, and Breyer, who said that the court's rigid rule against great practical difficulties. In a nutshell, this is the deal. I believe, and I'm not an attorney. I do have a paralegal certificate. I got one many, many years ago when I didn't know what I was going to do with my life, and I never spent a moment doing it. But essentially what they are saying of a sort is that if somebody tells somebody else, say, I think my boyfriend is going to kill me, okay? The person that they tell this to after they've been killed, that cannot be used in terms of testimony. You can't go and say, well, we call to the stand, blah, 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 blah. Did this person on this day tell you that they believed their boyfriend was going to kill them? Yes, that's not admissible anymore. A murder victim's earlier reports to the police and by fiat to friends, family, neighbors, employees, employers can't be used against the accused killer at the trial. I would assume, I am not an attorney, I would assume that one of the issues here is that somewhat falls under the rubric of hearsay. However, prosecutors in domestic violence cases have watched this case for quite some time. And what they feared is that in many instances, it would be difficult, if not impossible, to prove that a dead spouse or girlfriend was killed in order to prevent testimony. Because, according to the Supreme Court, you can use this kind of information if it can be shown that they intended to silence them as a witness. Because that would make it a different crime. The prosecutors are saying in such instances, the court's insistence on enforcing the confrontation right would appear to bar prosecutors from using at a trial the victim's past statements to police or to nurses. A woman goes into the emergency room, battered, the crap battered out of her. Who did this? Okay. Well, can file charges then and there. That's true. However, if the same woman is murdered by the same man 2 years later and the nurse who treated this woman for being battered 2 years earlier, she can no longer come forward and say, well, I treated this person for wounds that this guy inflicted, I believe, and she said to me, I think he's trying to kill me. That would establish intent. Now, up until 4.5 years ago, the courts had allowed prosecutors to use these kinds of out-of-court statements, such as police reports, in trials in which the witness was unavailable or unwilling. This rule was important in domestic violence cases because spouses or partners will refuse to testify during a trial. They don't want to break up a family, say. But back then, Scalia led the court in saying the use of these statements violated the defendant's right to confront his accuser in court. In other words, the same nurse is looking at the accused, and he doesn't know that this conversation ever took place. That's what they're saying in a nutshell. This is the deal here. Brenda Avi went to the home of Giles in the Giles case. After a brief exchange of words, Giles shot her 6 times and fled. When he was arrested, he said he acted in self-defense. He said Avi was jealous and prone to violence. She'd come to the house to confront him. At the trial, prosecutors introduced as evidence a report from the cops that they'd responded to domestic disturbances 3 weeks earlier to the same kind of call. The officer said Avi had told him that Giles had pulled a knife on her and, quote, threatened to kill her. The jury rejected the claim of self-defense. They convicted him of first-degree murder, but under today's ruling, Giles will get a new trial. If prosecutors want to use the report from the cops from 3 weeks earlier, they're going to have to prove that Giles killed Avi with the intent to silence her. Now, because he hadn't been accused of anything at that point, of course this doesn't apply. Of course this is not relevant or germane. Because there's no reason. Why would he silence her? Over what? The disturbance had already happened. I don't know if it had been adjudicated, but it had been resolved one way or another. I think that given the nature of how domestic violence cases have evolved in this country, that this particular clause, the confrontation right in the Sixth Amendment of the Constitution, it does not apply. When this was written, women did not have the right to vote. Women were not the equals of men. Now, I know women don't make what men make per hour, but men and women are considered equal under the law in 2008, generally, especially in these cases. I think the Supreme Court made an idiotic decision in this. One must take into account changes in society that occur in between the signing of the Constitution and 2008. It does happen. The world has changed considerably. The idea of original intent doesn't make any sense. If you reanimated the Founding Fathers and you reanimated the authors of the Constitution, Mr. Madison and Mr. Franklin, they would not recognize today's world. Do you think that they would write the Constitution the same way? Of course not. This is a terrible decision. However, you may be of the mind that it was a good one, that you should always have the right to face your accuser, and anything that might be construed as hearsay, unless it can be shown that to silence a witness existed, you might believe the Supreme Court has struck a blow for fairness. I think they haven't. I don't think that they have taken into account that times have changed considerably. Was the Supreme Court wrong in reversing this murder conviction? I say absolutely. He killed the woman. Period. He stabbed her 6 times. That's it. He killed her, overturning the conviction on some nonsense because 3 weeks earlier the cops filed a report and that was inclusive in the evidence. That's absurd. Did he kill her? Yes, he did. And now it's being thrown out. Was the Supreme Court wrong? Wendell says yes. What say you? We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Wendell, Johnny Wendell, me, I am appalled at these decisions today. They seem to make very little sense. They are not consistent. And ultimately, they are nothing but detrimental to the more powerless members of our society, that is to say, women and children. When we come back, let's talk about this. Was the Supreme Court wrong? Abso-freaking-lutely. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. My name is Wendell. Mike Malloy is ill. He shall return, and so shall I. And let me give you a little bit of 411. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back.
'Cause who disgraces emergency cases? But when you say we're done, we still hang on. When you say we're done, we still hang on. 'Cause nine, nine, nine's a waste of time. 'Cause everybody hates an emergency case. Everybody hates an emergency case.
This is the Mike Malloy Show. Johnny Wendell in for the ailing Mike Malloy. We're talking about the United States Supreme Court and their heinous decisions today. They have rejected the death penalty for child rape in Louisiana, and they've reversed a murder conviction in Los Angeles based in the idea that some of the evidence was made via out-of-court statements. Out-of-court statements that were made to police 3 weeks before the murder in a domestic disturbance. This now means that the word of police officers, nurses, social workers et al. Ad nauseum cannot be admissible in these murder cases because the Sixth Amendment says in all criminal prosecutions the accused shall enjoy the right to be confronted with the witnesses against him. Yes and no. Things have changed considerably when it was a horse thief back in 1790. Times have changed considerably. And the idea that this kind of naivete has reversed a man who stabbed his girlfriend 6 times, this conviction, and that he could theoretically walk free among us again, is a travesty of justice. It'd be one thing if every single witness you had was somewhat hearsay-based. It's another thing in its entirety if one or two of the testimonials against somebody that establish or bolster the idea that you're dealing with a violent perpetrator or offender are used, that all they are being used as ancillary. I think this is ridiculous. I think the Supreme Court, in an attempt to hold the Sixth Amendment sacred, is missing the point. We are at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Mike, in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, you're on with Johnny.
Hello, Wendell?
Yes, Mike.
I disagree with you, and I would laud the Supreme Court for their decision in all the cases they made today on this basis.
Yeah, why?
First of all, the Sixth Amendment and all of them are chiseled in stone, and we paid a dear price to get those amendments. Mm-hmm. They ruled by them. And
okay. I find it fascinating that the Sixth Amendment is sacred. On the other hand, down the street in Washington, the Fourth Amendment is being trod on constantly, especially by Democratic lawmakers that are taking money from telecoms. And you know what I mean here. Why is it that that's an issue and this isn't?
Well, it should be an issue because those that tamper with it should go right to jail.
Okay. I'm sorry here. I got to tell you, Mike, I regard their decision today as naive. I regard it as tying the hands of prosecutors. Look, prosecutorial misconduct is a terrible thing, and there are abuses of people who in the judicial system who seem to forget that you're innocent until proven guilty in America. We don't have the same laws or the same jurisprudence that they have in Europe or in Asia. That being said, why make it harder to get convictions against abusive people based on an antiquated statute? I think that they made a mistake here. Lois in Miami, Florida, you're on with Johnny.
Hi.
Lois.
I agree with you, and I think this case will set back child abuse, spouse abuse and domestic violence.
I think so, too.
It'll make it much harder for anybody to ever prove anything.
Of course.
And how can you confront anyone that's dead?
That's right. You can't confront the dead. They're gone. If I am a police officer and I see a decision like this, a prosecutor and I see a decision like this, I am horrified. What am I going to do? You have just tied my hands. Pat, in Phoenix, Arizona, you're on with Johnny.
Oh, is that for Pat?
Yeah, that's you.
Okay, sorry, I just took the phone away for a second. I disagree with you on the discussion of the first decision by the court on the child rape.
Why?
And I have some personal experience in this area, and seeing the criminal justice system up front, mm-hmm. it's not as fair or provide as much information to the jurors as, you know, people imagine it does.
Right.
And in a lot of these cases, I'm pretty sure the only evidence is really the testimony of the child involved.
Not anymore now. I mean, you have DNA testing. There are so many ways that these things can be proven now. It's not the same as it used
to be. Well, in the case that I was involved in or know of, and know all the person, all the details.
Right.
Somebody was extradited from a foreign country for an allegation of child rape that had happened 7 years prior.
Right.
The only evidence was the testimony of the child, or the former child at this point. Who was the
perpetrator in this case?
It was my brother.
It was your brother. Is he still serving time for this?
Actually, it's life in prison without chance of parole.
Okay, and you believe that he was unfairly convicted of this?
Well, the process is in place in Florida. Actually, the jury is only a six-person jury.
Mm-hmm.
The jury does not know what the penalty is. They are not told at all that they're
right.
putting a person in jail for life.
Okay.
And actually, the prosecuting attorney has...
when the jury is seated, they didn't tell them that this is what happens when this crime is committed. They didn't tell them this.
Absolutely not. I mean,
okay.
and it's very strict throughout the entire proceedings that you can't let them know what the penalties are.
Okay. So what happened? How'd they convict your brother then?
It was only a testimony of the alleged victim, and actually there was testimony by other folks that my brother was never in the house at the rape occurred. So
okay, that he was not there at the time, and
well,
yet somehow a prosecutor managed to convince a jury of this, even though your brother wasn't on premises.
Absolutely.
Well, that sounds like a miscarriage of justice, Pat. That being said, one miscarriage of justice, assuming that what you're saying is so. I mean, you know, it's not like I have the prosecutor on the other line to refute your case. I'm not going to turn the radio show over to both of you. That being said, this decision today that reverses a murder conviction, there's no question that Giles murdered his girlfriend. That's not the issue. He stabbed her six times. He was convicted of murder. The idea that you can't use a bit of prior information, that it's thrown out because of the Sixth Amendment, that's ludicrous. That's not the same thing. David in New York, you're on with Johnny.
Johnny, how you doing?
What do you think?
Listen, I just wanted to make an opinion that I think prosecutorial misconduct is a lot more common than you've made out to be.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that it doesn't exist, David. I'm not saying that it's uncommon. I'm not taking their side. What I'm saying is you are negating the way things have changed in the modern world. Things are not the way they were back in the 1780s, sir. You have to take into account that women and children are not chattel anymore. They're people. When we return, I wouldn't go so far as to say that this ranks with the judicial insanity that went down in Washington, D.C. today. We got a new law in this state, California, coming in. Oy gewalt. You're going to want to hear this. Johnny Wendell in for Mike Malloy, who's illin. We shall return.
Got a man that's more than 8 foot tall, 4 foot shoulders, and that ain't all. King size papa.
This is Johnny Wendell here.
He's my king size papa.
On the Mike Malloy Show.
I take the door off the hinges when my baby comes to call.
And baby is calling. Your king size papa is here.
A lot of him, the way he grew,
mm-hmm.
enough to last
him. Mike, not feeling well today. I'm in for him.
King size.
Our friends on K-Talk AM 1150 in Los Angeles recognize that song. It's my walk-on song, as we say in the radio business. Oh, yeah. A wonderful, wonderful song from your king-size papa, Johnny Wendell, here. We were talking about in the last hour, if you just joined us, about the judicial overreach imposed by the U.S. Supreme Court and some rather dicey decisions that they made today, in my humble opinion. That's the good old judicial branch. Legislative branches of local governments in the states of California and in Washington have decided to do a little nanny-stating on us here. If you're in California, if you're in Los Angeles with me, or San Francisco, San Diego, San Jose, Sacramento, wherever, or in Seattle, or Puyallup, or Tacoma, or Spokane, or Bellingham, or whatever in Washington, you are dreading what happens on July 1st, aren't you? Now, for those of you that are in 48 other states or all over the world, let me explain. On the 1st of July, you can no longer hold a cell phone in your hand as you're traveling, as you're driving. And this is the gist of them. In California, the law prohibits all drivers from using a handheld wireless telephone while operating a motor vehicle. Motorists 18 and over can use a hands-free device, a Bluetooth, and drivers under the 18 can't. You can use a cell phone during an emergency, like when you're calling an ambulance, a fire department, or a cop. Other than that, no. The base fine for the first offense in California is $20 and $50 for subsequent convictions. In the state of Washington, drivers caught holding a mobile phone to their ear risk $124 tickets. To talk on the phone, drivers have to use a hands-free headset or speaker. The law allows exceptions for people reporting an emergency or crime like California. Difference in Washington is the violation is a secondary offense. In other words, it's an add-on offense. Means an officer has to first stop you for something else like speeding, and then the cell phone offense can be added to the ticket. They can't pull you over in the state of Washington simply because you're talking on a cell phone. Of course, as we know, the constabulary, the popo, the 5-0, the boys in blue, they want to find something to pull you over for. They generally pretty much can anytime they feel like it. So that means whatever you were going to do in Washington State, you got to tack on $124 onto the ticket if you happen to be holding a cell phone to your ear. I can't even begin to tell you how much I hate these laws. This is the most intrusive, ludicrous, ridiculous legislative overreach of the year. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a talk radio host and it's going to cut into my calls, but of course this has occurred to me. It is dumb. It's D-U-M-B, dumb. Somebody actually gets a call from a loved one, from a friend, from whomever, while they are on a major freeway or highway in our states. And by the way, this is already the law in New York State. And it's coming to wherever you are, too. So don't think it's just me peeing and moaning for no reason. This is going to happen everywhere. It is a matter of principle to oppose this thing. People are going to be pulling over to the breakdown lanes to have conversations constantly. Now, I seem to recall that when I was a kid and I learned how to drive back in Massachusetts, because that's where I'm from, the breakdown lanes were put there if you broke down, not because you wanted to talk to somebody. Also, as a child growing up in Massachusetts, I learned how to drive with one hand if I had to. Funny thing that. It seems that this law doesn't take into account that there are people that actually they may only have one working arm. Like Bob Dole. What if Bob Dole is driving in California, one of his arms doesn't work? Or suppose you do have two working hands, two working arms, and you are drinking a soda pop or a cup of coffee. That means one hand's on the cup, one hand's on the wheel. Why is that different if it's a cell phone? Well, when this bill was passed, it's because cell phones are a distraction. That's my favorite. They're a special kind of distraction, and that's why there had to be a law against them. This is bull crap. This is nonsense. I'm telling you something. I am going to go all out. I'm going to go whole hog to find out which legislators in the states of California and Washington were getting money from Sprint or Verizon or from whomever to Bluetooth it. It's another way of them to sell you stuff. Look, we know, for example, these telecoms are all powerful. Look at the crap that's going on in Washington, D.C. All of these weak-kneed, wimpy Democratic Party legislators who all of a sudden are for immunity for the telecoms. Turns out you look into their affairs, and I got proof right here, that they're getting money from the telecoms. That's why they folded on this thing, so the telecoms can't be sued. There are 40 suits against the telecoms outstanding for FISA violations. They know they could be raped for billions of dollars, and they should be. They broke the law going along with the government in this stuff. You need a warrant for this stuff. I don't even want to go down the FISA road, but I will in this particular instance because lawmakers capitulated when they got money, and to me, this stinks of the same thing in Washington. It stinks of the same thing in California. Who says I can't drive with one hand? Hell, when I was drinking, I drove with my knees. I'm sorry. I have not drank and driven since Reagan was president, when he was alive. Not that you could tell. That being said, this seems to me to be utterly ridiculous. People get distracted by all kinds of stuff. A good tune on the radio. A pretty girl or a handsome man in the car next to them. A witty bumper sticker. A hateful bumper sticker. A tattered American flag. That always drives me crazy. The disrespect for the flag. The people put their flags up to show how patriotic they are. And then they let them get rained on or tattered or drag on the ground. That infuriates me. Therefore, I am distracted. So far as I remember, recognizing my own psychological makeup, when I am infuriated, I tend to get distracted. What should they do? Ban bumper stickers. Ban the radio. No more tip-tapping on the steering wheel. No more waving your hands like in the air like you just don't care to your favorite hip-hop track. No more belting out a country weeper with Kenny Chesney. Because that would be distracting. On the other hand, the radio manufacturers of radio companies, record companies, etc., et al. Ad nauseum, media companies would go crazy because it would cut into their business. This law was made as a business decision, I guarantee you. I am furious. I can talk to somebody on the phone and pay attention to the road. God didn't make me that kind of a damn fool. I'm a fool in other ways, I'll grant you that. But not in this one. This handheld cell phone law in my state of California and the one in Washington stink. Why on earth would anybody think this was a good idea? It will not prevent any accidents. It will create massive ticketing. And it will scare the hell out of people when they get phone call on their cells. Should I pick it up or should I not? That is more dangerous than anything else. Yes, I am against texting somebody. If you're there diddly bopping with the little keys on your cell phone, you're probably going to crash into something. Especially if you don't have the thing set properly and it's misspelling stuff on purpose. Another infuriating aspect of the cell phone. But that is not either there or here. I am against this law. I think it's stupid. It's once again the government nanny stating away on us here, turning us into little children. We're little cripples. We can't think for ourselves. We're unable to drive without both hands. I mean, come on. I was taught in driving school, for example, that you drove with one foot, right? You took your foot off the accelerator, you put it on the brake, unless you were driving a shift, in which case the other foot was on the clutch. But you always had a free foot. Do you know anybody who drives that way? No. Everybody has one foot on the accelerator, one foot on the brake. We dance back and forth. We learn how to do this stuff. If we can do that, then certainly we can drive with one hand. I am against this law. I regard it as crap. And I don't know why anybody would think that this is a life-enhancing decision being made by the California legislature or anywhere else. It is just a way to figure out another way to rip money out of the wallets of drivers. It is another petty infraction that basically cannot be proven to be that detrimental. Very funny, Ian. What do you think? Am I nuts? I don't think so. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. 80. I'm right here. I'm so verklempt, I'm saying dreidel instead of 80. Not a happy man. I'm Johnny Wendell. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Don't go anywhere. Johnny Wendell here.
You get a fast car.
In from Mike Malloy. Mike's not feeling well. Me and Big Ian are manning the show here. Ian's paying the music. Fast Car by Tracy Chapman. Okay, very good. Apparently, he seems to regard this particular topic as a matter of cars. It's not. We've been talking about these laws that go into effect on July 1st in Washington State and in California that say that you have to have both hands away from a cell phone. You got to have a Bluetooth. You got to have a unhandheld wireless device, or you can't drive. I don't understand why anybody was in favor of this thing. I recognize that the telecoms and the cell phone companies have massive amounts of power and massive amounts of money, and they want to sell us more stuff. And supposedly this will make us safer and make us more considerate drivers. I just don't see it. This is not the same thing as wearing a seatbelt. This is not the same thing as wearing a helmet on a motorcycle. A seatbelt prevents a clear and pressing injury in terms of going through a windshield. A motorcycle is helmet prevents you from cracking your skull like an egg on the pavement, generally, in some cases. There is no evidence to say that if you are talking on a cell phone, it's going to make you a better or a worse driver if you got one hand or both on the wheel. This is excessive manipulation by the government of its people. We are once again being treated as children. Larry,
yeah.
On K-Talk.
Yeah, I think it's a good law, and I think they should have did it years ago.
Why?
Well, for number one, the area that I live in has these big, huge streets, and after 6:30, they're completely deserted. There's only two cars out there, one going east, one going north, and somehow they managed to smash into each other.
Okay.
All right.
Now, what does this have to do with somebody? They're a pair of idiots, man. There'd be idiots with or without the cell phones, don't you think?
Well, I see it all the time down here. So that's number two. These people, even if they're not on the cell phone, they can't drive. I mean, they're going the wrong way down the street. I can stand on a corner and I can see this happen 8, 10,
okay, but Larry, why should I suffer the slings and arrows of the people in your neighborhood that can't drive when you just admitted it, whether or not they're on the cell phone is irrelevant? You just made my case for me. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Look, I fail to see why a cell phone is more distracting than an iPod. Really, think about it like this. You've got both of your ears clogged with an iPod. It's blaring your favorite tunes. You can't hear if there is an ambulance or a fire truck or a police car behind you. Isn't that true? If you're way into the music, you're going to get into the groove. You're going to start playing a little air guitar, perhaps. You're going to be drumming. You're going to be bopping. And you're paying less attention. Tell me, therefore, is an iPod any different than a cell phone? Well, because you're not talking to somebody else. They're not telling you anything. Hey, man, I remember back in the bad old days when the Beatles revolutionized the world, people used to say, the Beatles are talking to me. That's why I like them. So you tell me what the difference is, because, frankly, I just don't hear it at all. We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Joe in Tempe, Arizona. You're on with Johnny.
Hey, Johnny, you're wrong once again. Let me tell you, I live here in Arizona. I drive in Tempe and Scottsdale, and these women, they like zombies. They get on their phone and they're talking to their lesbian girlfriend and with their
all of them
with their cell phone. And I'm telling you, they get in the SUVs, and I swear to God, you think they're going to run you right off the road. I mean,
okay, you're in Tempe, Arizona, just outside of Phoenix.
Yeah, but I drive in the Scottsdale where the rich people live, and let me tell you something. I am so happy. I want them to bring this law to Arizona and put some of these women in prison, but not in prison, in Tent City with Sheriff Joe. And they'll probably be happy because they'll be there with their lesbian girlfriends.
Oh, come on, Joe. First of all, Joe drives in Scottsdale, and he has problems. The average driver in Scottsdale is 80 years old, Joe. That's more of an issue than cell phones. People that are way past the curve reflexively with lesbian girlfriends. What did I do? Like send out a magic spell, like a dog whistle or something like that? You know, Ian, this is your fault. You had to play the Tracy Chapman song. Tracy Chapman's a lesbian woman. Naturally, that's what set the guy off. I'm blaming you for that one, man. Bob in Colorado. You're on with Johnny.
Hey, how's it going, Johnny?
Bob.
Yeah.
I take it you're for this ridiculous law, too.
I am for this wonderful law. I'm a commercial driver driving a 34,000-pound truck.
Uh-huh.
Got 8,000 miles in already this month. And
uh-huh.
I can pick these people out that are yielding onto the interstate. And before I ever get up next to them, I know that they're on their cell phones chatting. They don't pay any attention to what's coming up next to them.
Okay, I have one question for you, Bob. You ever use a CB radio to see where you are to talk to your friends?
I do use a CB radio. And
very good, very good. But what's the difference? You're talking, you're chatting. But because you're a trucker with a CB, it's okay for you, it's not okay for them. That's not fair. And you're a professional driver, they're amateurs. When we come back, you're going to love this next thing. This is a crack-up, man. Believe me. Wendolyn from Molloy. Got an hour and a half to go. Don't go anywhere. Somehow I got stuck between a rock and a hard place. And I'm down on my luck. Yes, I'm down. Right in thinking that is Ozzy Osbourne singing the Bee Gees song Stayin' Alive? Okay. Where did you find this? I can't believe such a thing. I can't believe Sharon Osbourne allowed her husband to go into a studio and record a Bee Gees song. That one, especially. Maybe one of the old ones, like How Do You Mend a Broken Heart? That I could see. The Goofy Disco song, though, that has to be one of the most distasteful mismatches in musical history. I am, of course, Johnny Wendell. This is the Mike Molloy Show. Mike's out today. He doesn't feel very well. Let's send regards to him. Get well soon. Get up on your feet. Get rocking again, Mike, please. We have been talking about this ludicrous cell phone law. It goes into effect in California and Washington State. Apparently, you got to have a Bluetooth. You got to have both hands on the wheel. Can't have a hand on the cell phone. Oh my! I don't know. To me, it's insulting. It's insulting to me as an adult. But by the way, until you are 18 years old as a driver, you can't even have a Bluetooth. That's fine. I would go along with a grace period of a year and a half, 2 years as a learning driver. Nothing wrong with that. But as a grown man who needs to communicate in a car because California is like that, this is insulting to me. Curtis. On K-Talk.
Yes.
Curtis.
Yes, Johnny, I totally disagree with you.
Why?
Because I have been on streets, freeways, seeing mostly women, but men
also. Oh, no, don't start this woman-bashing driver nonsense, because after this comes Asian driver bashing, too, and I won't put up with that either.
Well, okay, then I will say people. I have seen people.
It's always women or it's always Asians get attacked for being bad drivers.
I'm just saying it like it is. It was a woman. That's all I'm saying. But anyway,
uh-huh.
People, I see them driving and talking on their cell phones, holding it.
Yeah.
And I saw this woman run right into a car as we all started to slow down. She was so into her conversation to where she's wiped this car out. She saw it at the very last minute.
Curtis.
Yes.
Curtis, if it isn't that, isn't it going to be something else? Suppose, like, she didn't like a tune on the radio and she's fiddling to get a better one and she's looking down, bang, she goes into a car.
Well, yeah, well,
that's very possible.
That's very possible. That's
okay,
possible.
Okay, then what are you going to do, man?
Then
you're going to ban the radio next. No, come on. Stop. Why is it y'all are so keen to let the government run your lives like this? we're it, look, if you can pass a driving test and you don't screw up for a couple of years, doesn't that sort of prove that you know how to drive a vehicle? I do anyway, and I recognize that some people, the cell phone brings out the worst in them, but why should I be responsible for the fact that they're a bunch of morons? I am not a bad driver, and I'm from Boston. We're notoriously aggressive, but we can drive. Craig.
Hello. Gotcha. Sorry.
Yeah. Calling all the way from Madison, Wisconsin. What's up, man?
A couple of issues. I've been hit by a car 4 times. That's unique.
You've been hit four? Were they all on cell phones?
I don't drive a car.
No. You didn't answer the question, Craig. Were all 4 of the people who hit you, were they on cell phones?
No. I'm giving you a little background.
Craig. Let me ask you another question. Did any of the people hit you, were they on a cell phone at the time?
I'll never know because I get hit from behind.
Okay, so if you don't know, then the issue is the cell phone, not the hitting of Craig.
Honey, let me give you some background. I'm on a bike.
I know. You said
that. So the point is I've been hit, and the problem there is, well, it's a couple things. Because I'm on a bicycle, I'm in a unique, very vulnerable situation.
True.
Where I've got the same rights and responsibilities as a car.
Absolutely.
And really emphasis on rights, dude. Because I pay the same taxes, you're on my road as much as I'm on yours.
I sympathize with you, but the problem is this, Craig. The issue is, does a cell phone being in your ears or in your hands make you a better or a worse driver? Answer, no. Everybody who's talked here said, these crazy women who were distracted by the cell phone drove into something. What makes you think if they had both hands on the wheel and a Bluetooth in their ear, they were going to be any less distracted? Y'all, you know what's the funny thing about you guys? You wreck your own arguments here. The idea is 2 hands on the wheel are better than 1. Well, you're probably right, but 1 hand can drive just as well as 2 if you were a reasonably dexterous human being, and I rest my case. I am all for being talked out of my position. I didn't think it was imbecilic, but you haven't made the case yet. Now, I have something for you that you're going to enjoy immensely for the balance of this hour. This you'll love. Now, if anybody who's ever heard me before knows that generally anything from the Bay Area of California, San Francisco, I hate that place. My wife and I lived there for 3 years. Torture. Hell on earth. Sun never comes out. Too many panhandlers. Slacker attitude. Still 1967 to most of those old hippies. I can't stand that stuff. That being said, they came up with something in San Francisco that I endorse so wholeheartedly that I am absolutely going along with this. Listen to this. They are going to honor George W. Bush with a memorial. He's not dead yet. Not from the neck down, anyway. Check this out. From the New York Times, Ronald Reagan's got his highway, the 118 freeway here in California. Lincoln has a memorial. Washington has a capital and a state. But Bush is going to be the only president to have a memorial named after him that you can contribute to from a bathroom. This was come up within a bar in San Francisco. The voters of San Francisco are going to be asked to change the name of a prize-winning water treatment plant on the shoreline to the George W. Bush Sewage Plant. Supporters say they got lots of signatures, and they are joining into a proud American tradition of poking political figures in the eye. Most of these people are narcissistic egomaniacs, said the organizer, so it's important for satirists to help define their history rather than letting these politicians define their own history. Republicans in San Francisco hate this, of course. They say that's an abusive process. A bunch of drunks in a bar came up with this idea, want to put it on the ballot as a big joke without regard to the city's governance of cost. These are the same people who put Schwarzenegger on the bill, on the ballot back in 2002, a recall that cost the state millions and millions and millions of dollars. When their boy Arnold got in, they were happy. Now Schwarzenegger's got a 30% approval rating in California. Unemployment's at 7% in the state. And everybody hates Arnold. But it seemed like a good idea at the time, didn't it, Mr. Epstein? Now, this is what happens. The renaming takes effect on January 20th when the new president is sworn in. And regardless of the outcome, supporters plan to commemorate the inaugural with a synchronized flush of toilets in San Francisco that would send a flood of water towards the plant, which is now called Oceanside. It's a way of doing something physical that's mentally freeing, said somebody, a guy named Stacey Renicius, who was a software consultant who supports the plan. It's weird, but it's true. It's cathartic for these people, literally. I wholeheartedly agree with the idea of naming a sewage and reclamation plant after George W. Bush. What other parts of American life should be named for Bush? In San Francisco, they're going to give him a sewage treatment plant. I absolutely agree with that. What else do you think should be named after George W. Bush? We are at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. What would you like to see named after 43? W, the Texas Tornado, the King of Crawford, the Chimp. 800-989-1480. They're going to name a sewage plant in San Francisco after Bush. What would you like to name after Bush? I got some ideas, but I'm open to hearing yours when we return. This is the Mike Malloy Show. This is Johnny Wendell. The papers and the trash. We will be back.
Just finish cleaning up your room. Let's see that dust car with that broom. Get all that garbage out of sight. Or you don't go out Friday night. Yaggity yak!
Don't talk back.
You just put on your coat and hat and walk yourself to the laundromat. And when you finish doing that, bring in the dog and put out the cat.
Don't hold back.
Take out the papers and the trash. Or you don't get no spending cash.
This is the Mike Malloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in for the ailing Mr. Malloy. Hope he feels better soon. We're talking about an idea put forth by some people in San Francisco who want to change the name of the Oceanside Water Pollution Control Plant, that is a sewer plant outside of San Francisco, to the George W. Bush Sewage Plant. I regard this as a capitally excellent idea. And I am curious as to what other things in the United States of America that you would name the George W. Bush whatever. I think the idea of a sewage plant is magnificent. I think here in Southern California, we would be more than happy to rename a smog treatment plant after George W. Bush, as he is the manufacturer of more crap in the air over the last 8 years than anybody I can think of. Him and his entire crime family in cahoots. Him, Cheney, and the rest. I was thinking that if you're going to name sewage after Cheney, after Bush, because he's a BS artist, if there ever was one, got to name something after old Dick Cheney, too. I wonder, like a recycling plant, because he seemed, or something that would have to do with the bionic human being. The Dick Cheney Memorial Heart Ward, I don't know. He is a little more nebulous in the case of Cheney. But in the case of Bush, I don't know. Funny to me that in the wake of what happened on 9/11, that Bush was lionized. He was the savior. You couldn't think of the idea that you'd ever criticize this guy. We all stood together on that day, blah, 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 yak, yak, yak. Well, now it's 2008, and you can't find anybody that has anything nice to say about this guy. The very idea, even in San Francisco, that you would name a sewage plant after this guy, that might give you a hint of the depths of how this country has sunk under his leadership. To go from a 90% approval rating to a 24% approval rating in the same presidency. I think a sewage plant is a damn good idea. Dave in Salt Lake City, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, Johnny. I just wanted to say that I have a great place in America for a new George Bush name. I have a painful, throbbing growth on my butt that I think would be aptly named George.
So let me ask you something. Let's assume, for the sake of talking, that this is a hemorrhoid. I have no idea. Would you prefer to name this hemorrhoid after Bush, after Cheney, after Rumsfeld, after Feith, after Pearl, after... Well, I mean, if you were going to name a hemorrhoid, would it be Bush first or Cheney first?
It would have to be Bush, because I have a Cheney on the other side, so I don't know.
Oh, man, that's brilliant. We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Oh, man, who says the Mormons don't have a sense of humor? That's brilliant. Dan in Lexington, Kentucky, you're on with Johnny.
Hey, how you doing, Johnny?
Dan, what do you think we should name after George W. Bush besides the sewage plant in San Francisco?
I got three ideas, and I'll be quick about it.
Okay.
One would be a dead-end road. That would be symbolic of, you know, going nowhere.
Absolutely. Okay, that's
another
one.
Another one would be like, you know, them traffic circles in downtowns and small little towns that just go around in a circle and a circle.
Rotaries.
A circle, it really goes nowhere.
Yeah, rotaries, as they call them, roundabout in England.
Roundabout, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And the best one, you could do it after Bush, Cheney, Rice, Rumsfeld, anybody you wanted to.
Yeah.
The next natural disaster.
Yeah, like Hurricane Cheney, right?
Hurricane Cheney coming in at force 5.
Hurricane Cheney at force 5. I mean, can you imagine the people of New Orleans, right? Like, this would be the ultimate revenge if Hurricane Cheney leveled, I don't know, well, it's not going to level Jackson Hole, Wyoming, which is where he lives. They don't have hurricanes there. But if it leveled the country club in Houston where he used to snort coke off of strippers' butts, that Hurricane Bush destroyed part of the rich side of Houston, Texas, I think that would be poetic justice. There'd be dancing in the streets in New Orleans if that happened, don't you think? James in Dallas, Texas, nowhere near Houston. You're on with Johnny.
Hey, I've got an idea. Name every single landfill in the country Bush Cheney Road.
Excellent.
And then, because then what will end up happening is that people will forget that they're called landfills, and they will always be called Bush Cheney Road.
So, in other words, it will not just be the naming of a specific thing in a specific place. It will be on, in 2009, dictionary.com. You won't even call it a landfill anymore. Oh, I got to take this recycling down to the bush. Yeah, you know, you want to enter on Cheney Road there. That's not a bad idea, you know, although there's always a lot of traffic accidents at the corner of Cheney and Rove Boulevards. Must be all those lesbians on their cell phones. Kathy, in Hershey, Pennsylvania, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, Johnny Dandy. I just wanted to say that we could name the parking lots that they're opening up in California for the middle class that have lost their home.
Oh, down in Riverside County, yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of like back in the Depression when they called all of those tent cities and shack cities Hoovervilles, that we can call those Bushvilles and Cheneyvilles?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know something? An awful lot of good people, a lot of nice people lost their homes, they lost their money, they lost their cars, their savings, they've lost everything. Do you really want to add insult to injury by making them write down their address somewhere as Bush, California? Cheney, Oregon, Carl Rove, Texas. Insult to injury, dude. Steve in Austin, Texas, you're on with Johnny.
Yeah. I think, being here in Austin, Texas, I think we should rename the burned-out governor's mansion as the George W. Bush Memorial to Ineptitude. At the time, they had one police officer on duty monitoring, and, get this,
yeah.
They didn't have functioning infrared sensors to sense intruders into the perimeter.
Oh, I gotcha. I gotcha. I understand.
What a dichotomy.
You know what's really interesting, Steve, is that, I don't know if you know this, Bush has purchased a ton of land in Paraguay. Paraguay, down in South America. There's nothing in Paraguay. I think there's one major city in Paraguay, Asuncion, right? Or that might even be in Uruguay. All I know is and you know why? Because there's no extradition with Paraguay. That's why all the Nazis went down there. Kind of fitting when you think about it, and I do not want to get into the ramifications of that last statement too deeply. But I don't know. Maybe, you know, if Bush goes to Paraguay, they should rename the country Bush. Finally put him on the map, huh? John in L.A., you're on with Johnny.
Yes, Johnny, I think they ought to rename the Diablo Canyon generating station the George W. Bush nuclear power station.
Because he can't pronounce nuclear, right? Everything's nuclear.
I thought it was nuclear. Isn't that how you pronounce it?
If your name is George Bush, it is. Hey, I've got a question for you as long as we're talking about El Diablo. John, what do you think of this John McCain idea of 45 new nuclear reactors during his presidency?
Well, if they dump all the waste at the White House, then it's cool.
Yeah, as long as he's president. Actually, that's the best idea at all. Why not change Yucca Mountain in Nevada, 75 miles from Las Vegas? You know, McCain wants to dump nuclear waste there. Barack Obama doesn't. Change the name from Yucca Mountain to Bush Mountain. Can't get more wasteful than Bush, can you? When we return, the final hour beckons. And we got some interesting stuff to talk about. Wendell in from Mike Malloy. Don't go anywhere. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Sing it, honey.
I got a man that's more than 8 foot tall, 4 foot shoulders, and that ain't all. King size papa.
That would be me, Johnny Wendell.
He's my king size papa.
And for the ailing king size papa.
I take the door off the hinges when my baby comes to call.
Doing the Mike Malloy Show for another hour is your king size papa in Los Angeles, Johnny Wendell. Broadcasting to you from K-Talk AM 1150 in Los Angeles, everywhere all over the planet, courtesy of them internets and them Sirius and XMEs and all that good stuff. Oh, man. It is a pleasure to do Mike's show. I hope Mike feels better. I hope he's on his feet and in full tirade tomorrow, because that's what he does good. This show, this Mike Malloy show, is syndicated and broadcast from a company called Nova M Radio. And Nova M Radio is located in Phoenix, Arizona. And I had the pleasure and the privilege of spending 3 days there in January. Mike was out. And as you know, generally I fill in for Mike and sometimes for Randy Rhodes. And Mike was out. We couldn't get a studio to do the show here in Los Angeles. There's a log jam, Lakers season, because at the cluster we work at, we carry the Lakers. We carry the L.A. Kings. It just couldn't be done. So I got on my pony and I drove to Phoenix, Arizona, and met the wonderful crew of Ian and Billy and John Manzo and Kim and all these wonderful people. But it was right after New Year's Eve 2008, and I did something on New Year's Eve this year that I have never, ever done before. I made a New Year's resolution. I don't believe in that stuff. It's crap. If you're going to do something, do it. Just do it. Pick a Monday. Whatever. Pick it. Whatever. Do it. The idea of a New Year's resolution, it's almost like it's born to fail. Look at, I got to tell you something. As somebody who has been a gym rat for so much of his life, gyms love New Year's resolutions because, boy, everybody buys a membership, and by January 25th, you never see those people in a gym again. They just disappear. But at any rate, in the first week of January, when I met all the crew over at Nova M Radio, I was working on a New Year's resolution that I made, and it began on January 1st. I was determined that by my birthday, which is June 24th, I was going to get down to 175 pounds. I started at 208 and a half. As Ian, who was producing the show, can probably tell you, I was kind of stocky on the day that that he met me. You'd say that's a fairly accurate statement, wouldn't you, Ian? Where is
he? Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I was heavy. I had a gut. And I had decided on New Year's, I said, I've got to get rid of this. This has got to change. I'm at the point in my life where, because I did a lot of powerlifting when I was younger, and I built up a really good-sized frame. But there's a point when you get older, it's like your joints can't hold this kind of weight. And anything that you eat that slows your metabolism down, you can't have it anymore. It is a cruel fact of life that people in their teens and 20s can eat like a bunch of pigs and never gain a pound. When I go to Dodger Stadium or when I go to see the Celtics when they play at Staples Center against the Clippers or the Lakers, and I see these kids wolfing down this crap food and sucking down Coca-Cola, and you know they're going to burn all of it off in an hour. It just infuriates me, but that's just a fact of life. You know, you get older, your metabolism slows down. So I was determined I was going to hit 170 pounds by June 24th. That is approximately 5 months and 3.5 weeks. June 24th came yesterday, 176 and a half pounds. I was off by 1.5 pounds, worked out today, came home, weighed myself, 174 and a half. I did it. My New Year's resolution happened. I wouldn't say that I am skinny as a rail, but amazing things have happened for me since I went on this diet. I have phenomenal definition. I actually look like a person. My face has returned. I no longer look like Buddha. But I got to tell you something. This kicked my ass. This was hard. This was brutal. This was an Atkins diet taken to a very, very hard extreme. The Atkins diet's the only one that's ever worked for me because I have had fluctuating weight issues and I was a slight rock musician in my 20s. I was tiny. But as a kid, Mama Wendell used to feed us lots of sugar to placate us, so it started a very, very bad dieting trend young. And them ringdings and them yodels and that lack of exercise. And there was plenty of sedentary lifestyle and going on in the 70s, not just now. Pre-video games. There was plenty of TV watching and pot smoking and listening to the Allman Brothers and the Dead not moving and eating Doritos. That existed then, too. So I had to change all of my habits. And this year, I have been on the diet to end all diets. And it worked. It actually worked. I cut out all sugar. I cut out all starch. No potatoes, no rice, no bread, no pasta. All gone. Nothing but greens. Nothing but dairy. Nothing but meat. An Atkins diet. And nuts. The only carbohydrates that I ingest come from green vegetables. Some fruit very rarely. And it worked. But I do not eat after the sun goes down, and I drink a lot of water, and I now exercise 2 hours a day. And I lost my weight. I lost 35 pounds. That being said, it brings up an interesting issue for Americans. You and I know that there is one thing that Americans hate more than anything else, and that is discomfort. We are the most pampered, spoiled little princesses and princes on the planet. Anything that smacks of an imposition drives Americans crazy. Isn't that true? Isn't that why the idea that gasoline is $4.50 a gallon is galling? You thought it should be $1.70 forever, didn't you? And if you lived long enough and you remember back in the 70s when it was 27 cents a gallon up to 81 cents a gallon in 1973, that infuriated people despite the fact that it was still extremely cheap. Americans do not like to suffer. Ergo, dieting is very, very difficult for the average American because it runs contrary to the greatest American ethos of all, which is, ba-ba-da-ba-ba-da-di-da-da-dim, you can have whatever you want whenever you want it. Isn't that the ultimate American dream? You can have anything. In fact, you're entitled to anything and everything. You're entitled to cheap gas. Doesn't matter. You got to invade other countries to get it. You got to install stooges to get it. Fine. You're entitled to all the crappy food you can gorge yourself on, especially if the people that work in those miserable plants that make this junk, this crap, this you-know-what for you, get paid crap if they're illegals that are stuck in miserable pens in Iowa or Arkansas. Sure, they should suffer so that you can eat cheap. Because we're entitled. So when I went on this unbelievably stringent ascetic diet, in a way, I was being an American. Isn't that funny? Now we look at what happened a couple of weeks. What was it, like a week ago now or 2 weeks ago? Tim Russert died. He died because he was a man with a belly. It crushed the descending left ventricle of his heart. He was a borderline diabetic from a bad diet his whole life. Lionized by the entire news media. Of course, he was in the news media. They, you know, they don't eat their own. They love their own. That's why they made such a big production out of his passing. But Russert is the classic example of the overweight middle-aged American male. Said he was going to take care of business before he died. Well, he didn't. I do not want to end up like him. And I don't just mean in the hyper-cooperative corporate media sense. I don't want to die at 58 obese. I got a question for you about the issue of dieting. Is there a painless way to lose weight anywhere? Wendell says no. Wendell doesn't eat at night. Wendell skips meal. Wendell works out like a fanatic. Wendell, having crossed the big 5-0, has a slower metabolism than some. But Wendell is thin. I have a question for you. Isn't a diet that is going to be successful going to cause you discomfort? And isn't that something that nobody will ever tell you wherever you go on the issue of losing weight? Am I right on this? I think so. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. Is there, in fact, a pain-free, agita-free diet? Wendell says there's no such thing. No pain, no loss. All right, that didn't rhyme, but you know what I mean. We're at 800-989-1480. Pain-free diet? Let's hear it. This is The Molloy Show with Wendell sitting in. 800-989-1480. We'll be back. Don't go anywhere.
You are what you are. What you are. What you eat. You are what you are. What you are. What you are. What you eat.
Where's the beef?
I like mine with lettuce and tomato.
This is the Mike Molloy Show with Johnny Wendell sitting in. Oh my, a cheeseburger in paradise, eh? I don't think those two things go along with each other. We've been talking about the last 20 minutes or so whether or not there is such a thing as a pain-free diet. I have lost almost 35 pounds since the first of the year. It was my New Year's resolution, and I did it, and this is the most difficult diet I have ever been on in my life. It is stringent in the extreme. I have enraged the people around me by refusing to eat 90% of what was put in front of me. But at this point in my life, having seen my younger brother have a major heart attack this year, apparently we do have heart disease in our family, I am bound and determined not to cross 175 pounds going north ever again. Is there such a thing as a pain-free diet? We're always promised this stuff. You turn on the internet, there are millions of sites that claim that you can do this. You can eat whatever you want. We saw the story the other day of a guy waiting at the McDonald's food, lost 81 pounds. Well, yeah. If you eat a wackily unbalanced diet, you probably will lose a lot of weight, but you're going to gain all of it back. The question is this. Is there a pain-free diet? I don't think so. You got to burn more than you take in. They're hard. They take resolution. They take strength. They take determination. These things are not endemic to Americans. Because we're told our whole lives, you can have whatever you want. Well, I got to tell you something. If I'd had that philosophy, I'd still be tipping the scales at 208. We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Stephanie in Madison, Wisconsin, you're on with Johnny.
I don't think there's really, you know, this is a great topic, by the way. I love last hour's topic, but they said you're moving on, so I won't go into Bush. Where's the pig? Where's the pig?
The Bush pig. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that guy is such a slob. Anyway, you know, I don't think there's really any one answer. I told Ian that basically I'm a master dieter. I've dieted. I've gained and lost, gained and lost, gained and lost.
It's not healthy to do that, though.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
But you know what? I've learned, and I've done a lot of, you know, some a lot of research, read people like there's Gina Coletti, who's a science writer for the, I think, the New York Times. There's other people who've written books like Diets Don't Work.
Right.
But basically you have to do, and what you're probably going to discover, I'm guessing that you're going to basically, this diet is going to be your diet for the rest of your life. You're basically going to have to eat this way.
Let me ask you, Stephanie, why is it that, like, when somebody has a life-threatening condition, like a heart condition, or they develop diabetes or something like that, they change their diet? Okay, why is this that it has to happen? You have to have a heart attack. My poor brother is on a diet more stringent than mine because he had a heart attack. He's 47 years old. Diabetics, they find out that they're pre-diabetic, they're borderline diabetic. They got to change everything. If you hadn't gorged yourself like a pig on sugar for so long, this would have never happened to you in the first place. Why is it that it's got to be after the fact?
I think we have to be really careful because food is not just sustenance. It's comfort. It's a whole lot of things. And people have different body chemistries. What, you know, for you, Atkins works. For somebody else, they've talked about every different diet that you can imagine. You know, the high carb diet, the low carb diet,
the blood type diet. Yeah.
Right. Now,
but the basic question is this, Stephanie. Is there such a diet that will succeed without discomfort?
I think probably so, depending on what your goals are. I really do. I think, if you know your body, if you're, first of all, I mean, you may have to accept a higher weight than what you would ideally like.
Never!
You get to take your personality into place. Now, I have to tell you, what I told Ian when he asked about dieting, I said, look, I finally got it straight. I got, almost 14 years ago, and I'm in my 40s, I was diagnosed with ADD and depression.
Right.
I got treated with Adderall, which is wonderful. It's not just a bad thing. I make it feel my body for the first time. It is, people who truly have it, an imbalance. Plus the depression, when I got on Prozac, I started walking. I started living with a human being.
I'm glad that the anti-anxiety and anti-depression medication work for you. I don't have the luxury of taking those meds. I don't, and I won't, and I'm not a depressed person, so I can't. And Adderall, I can sleep. I don't need it. My point is this. It is interesting that in a society that says to you, you can have whatever you want whenever you want to have it, and you can be skinny, it doesn't work that way. Those two things are contradictory, but nobody ever says that. Veronica in Dallas, Texas, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, Johnny. How's it going?
Good. What do you think?
Well, I actually have a diet that works quite well. I use a meditative technique that's very, very good.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. What I do is I imagine Rush Limbaugh in a nude.
And then you can't eat for weeks, right?
Yeah, exactly. And not only am I disgusted, but besides, there's one bad side effect. I want to avoid big guys. It's unfortunate. I'm sorry, guys. If you're big, and I use it, but you know, it does help you quit eating.
Oh my God, the Rush Limbaugh revulsion diet. I got a better one than that, man. I want you to visualize Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity in a committed relationship. I'm not going to say which one's the top and which one's the bottom. I'm going to leave that to your own imagination. You won't eat for a week. When we come back, let's talk about Pfizer. Wendolyn from Molloy. Don't go anywhere.
Our enemies have never set foot on the campus of the United States Air Force Academy.
Well, okay, Mac, if you say so.
The movie makes another chance it takes.
Odds are you won't live to see tomorrow.
Secret agent man.
Yeah, 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 secret agent man. Got a little more, a little less than a half hour to go tonight. Don't know if Mike will be in tomorrow. Wasn't feeling well today. Maybe he will be. We don't know. We will know when we know. That, of course, Secret Agent Man by Johnny Rivers was the theme of a TV show, 1966. 12 years before the FISA law, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, was enacted to prevent overbearing, overpowerful executives in the White House, specifically of the Richard Nixon ilk, from spying on your phone calls without a warrant. There was no internet in 1978. Now we got cell phones, now we got the internet, now we got everything. And in the last 7 years and change, probably more actually, surveilling you before 9/11, illegally. Fourth Amendment to the Constitution says you cannot have a search without a warrant in America. Now, times have changed since 1789. I'm going to be consistent about this. I was crabbing about it earlier in the show, and it is true. But there are certain things in the Bill of Rights that are absolute, and the idea that I can communicate freely without worrying about the government eavesdropping on me is part and parcel of being a free being. Of course, the idea that, well, if you've done nothing wrong, you've got nothing to worry about, I'm sorry. Who's deciding what is wrong? That argument falls flat on its face. And this FISA immunity, what they are looking for in a nutshell, is that the telecom companies, all but four of them, cooperated with the government in spying on us without warrant. They will claim that these were calls and communiques and emails that came in from overseas. I don't care. Get a warrant. A FISA court will give you 72 hours without a warrant, then you got to have one. That's not impossible. You got to make your case in front of a secret court. It isn't like this is going to go out into the public anyway. Well, the telecom companies decided to let the government sneak and peek on us. And they are watching and facing 40 lawsuits against them from angry consumers. I would doff my cap if I had one on my head to them. And I believe that this telecom immunity from these suits, which is the basis and the bone of this new FISA legislation that the House signed, is wrong. In fact, it's unconstitutional, and I will get to that momentarily. Most disappointing to people on the American left is that Barack Obama supports this legislation after having gone on the record in February against a version of it. That's right. He says he'll support the bill when it comes to a Senate vote, despite his misgivings about the legal provisions for the telecom communications. Why he is doing this? A couple of reasons. Mostly, he doesn't want to get battered with the idea that he's weak on foreign policy by his opponent, Senator John McCain, and says that passing the legislation is part of a vital national security matter. This, Barack, as you know, because you taught constitutional law for 12 years, is crapola. Barack, you are lying. You know that this is illegal. We know that Benjamin Franklin was right when he says that when you trade your liberties and freedoms for a little security, you end up with none of those things. Now, do you? Now, Barack Obama knows this. This was done for political expediency, not unlike Mrs. Clinton's vote on the AUMF, or John Kerry's, or John Edwards. They voted to let Bush go to war in Iraq. They're all regretting it now. Well, that cost the lives of over 4,100 American servicemen and 500,000 Iraqis, so that might be a little more severe than flip-flopping on FISA. But he did. He caved. And as an attorney, he knows this is wrong. In law review after law review, in op-ed after op-ed, in so many newspapers that I've read in the last week, people are appalled that the government may actually get away with this. Recent developments have shown that two Democratic senators that you would not ordinarily believe would stand with Senators Feingold, Leahy et al. Are standing with them. They're against this law. Charles Schumer of New York, he's always been against this stuff, to be perfectly fair to him. And Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, says he will not vote for this. That's good. I know that one of my senators, Barbara Boxer, will vote against it. Feinstein I gave up on a long time ago. She's just Joe Lieberman in a dress. That being said, I am furious at Barack Obama. Political expediency does not match somebody whose soaring rhetoric of hope and change, in fact, it's contradictory. I can't be alone in this. When you found out that Obama was caving on FISA, did you start having second thoughts about Barack Obama? I did, and I do. We're at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Did Barack Obama make a terrible tactical error in ticking off his base? Because people on the American left are very, very serious on the issue of civil rights. People on the far right, the far left, and many in the middle are disgusted at the idea that the government should freely be able to monkey in your affairs under the aegis of wartime powers, because that's what President Bush has declared over and over and over. We're a country at war. You're naive. I find it ironic that when Obama is elected, and I believe he will be, Rasmussen puts the odds at him being elected at about 97-3 over McCain, that the same people that were excited as hell over Bush having the power to sift through mounds and mounds of information are going to be furious that a Democrat does. But you know something? I get no satisfaction out of that at all. I am furious at Barack Obama. And I am furious at the Democrats in the House who flipped their votes to support retroactive immunity for the telecoms because they were getting money from Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint. That is ridiculous. When we return, are you as angry as I am that he made this El Fold Areno just to look tough on national security? And does this not bode poorly for the likely Obama presidency? I'd have to say yes to all of the above. We are at 800-989-1480, 800-989-1480. Are you miffed at BHO? Wendell says yo. 800-989-1480, when we come back, let's talk about FISA and Barack's flip-floppery. Not happy. Not happy at all. This is Wendell in from Malloy. We'll be back.
Coupling cameras, flying boots, X-ray eye and a hat that shoots, flying Colt machine gun hat, poison tie, imagine that. Gee, I hope we break for lunch. I have protein pills to munch, 'cause
this is the Mike Malloy Show. Johnny Wendell in. Got a little bit longer to go. Then it's time to call it a night. We have been talking about Barack Obama's flip-flop on FISA. Says he supports a law that he regarded as abhorrent not 5 months ago. That is a flip-flop. He is afraid of being portrayed as a weakling on national security. Therefore, it seems a good idea for him to say that he condones law-breaking, because essentially what President Bush did and his NSA did is that they spied on communications without a warrant. And it is easy enough to get a warrant from a FISA court. Since 1979, less than 5 requests have been turned down. They could have done it. They didn't want to. They thought that was an abrogation of executive privilege during a time of war. That's crap. And now Barack Obama stands with that. He's made a few conciliatory gestures, and it is possible that this FISA vote is going to be postponed and may not even happen until the end of the summer. That is possible as well. I would like to see Mr. Obama come to his senses and say, I can't vote for a bill that is unconstitutional. He flip-flopped, though. Vital for national security? This is not true. There is nothing vital about trampling on our civil rights. And he knows this, too. Are you angry at Obama? I am. We're at 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. That is our number here. Anthony. In Dallas, Texas, you're on with Johnny.
How you doing?
What do you think?
You know, I disagree with his decision on his vote, but...
Well, he hasn't voted yet, but that's what he's saying. He says he's going to vote, yeah.
But we know what the outcome is going to be, but I'm 24 years old. I'm just starting out as a young man, and one thing scares me, and that's John McCain.
Okay.
I'm not saying that I agree with Obama, but if it takes him looking tough, if that's going to make him look tough, then so be it. I've lost friends in Iraq and Afghanistan. The last thing we need is this nut, John McCain, in the White House.
Okay, that says maybe. But once again, Anthony, that's the lesser of two evils philosophy. I would like to say that I can pull the lever for somebody that I don't feel has done something that was intrinsically evil and inherently the opposite of how I felt about things. Last Saturday, because I have a show here at K-Talk in Los Angeles, Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, we had Bob Barr on, former congressman from Georgia, libertarian presidential candidate, and he said, this FISA stuff is appalling. This is clear. I mean, Barr was a prosecutor in North Georgia. He was appointed by Reagan. He's a conservative, and he just said, look, this FISA stuff, that they violated the law. He said, Bush violated the law, period. If you give the telecoms immunity, they violated the law. They could have told the government to get stuffed, but they didn't. This is enraging and galling to me. Barack Obama is a legal scholar. He went to Harvard. He knows. He knows this is against the law. He just doesn't want to be seen as a candy-assed weakling. Well, Hillary Clinton had the same problem, didn't want to be seen as a candy-assed weakling either, and she lost because people were furious over what has happened in Iraq. This may be on a smaller scale, but it's still a flip-flop, and I don't like it. Alvin, in Alabama,
yes,
you're on with Johnny.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Last time I called Mike, I wanted to criticize St. Obama, and the man hung up on me. I've listened to Mike ever since Chicago. I've turned I don't know how many people onto his shows.
Okay.
I bet I have at least 15 tapes with nothing but Mike Below show on shows going all back to 97.
Okay.
Here's my problem.
Right.
I followed the Clintons. I bought a book on these people, the type Civil Rights Acts they were involved in Arkansas. When
right.
they came to Washington, D.C., they were tarred and feathered, not because Clinton was such a womanizer. They were tarred and feathered because they had a nasty habit of beating Republicans.
Right.
And so when Hillary stood up and said what she said, just like you're saying, to try to give that tough appearance, she wasn't cut any slack at all, these people. Oh, no, she's an extremist. She's John McCain on a dress.
Alvin, there's something that, you know, something that I think that you're getting at that I want to enumerate. You're right, Alvin, in a way. Why is it that you let somebody else define you as to what is tough or not tough? Isn't the essence of toughness standing on principle? That's what makes you tough. Not like I am ready to trample on the Constitution because Americans may be afraid. I mean, look at what happened the other day. McCain's chief advisor, Charlie Black, a guy that's done business with scurrilous characters as a lobbyist, came out and he admitted what we all know already. He said a terrorist attack in America is going to be good for John McCain. He's been excoriated in the press, ripped to pieces, says Charlie Black. Now, why did he say this? Why does he believe this is true? After all, if there's a terror attack while Bush is president, doesn't that blow a gigantic hole in the idea that he's, quote, kept us safe? No. If there's a terror attack on American soil between now and November 4th of any serious magnitude, people will flock to the authoritarian. They will flock to the hard ass. That's McCain over Obama, and Obama is covering his flank here. Obama is saying, I am not going to be out-toughed by anybody. But by doing this, he looks like a bigger coward than he has to be. He should stick to his guns and say, I'm an American. I'm proud. I do not back down. I have my principles, and I will not back off them. If you prove to me that I'm wrong, yes, I will back off. But he was right in February when he said that this bill was a piece of crap. Now it's okay because he's the nominee. It's all right to take a poop on the people that supported him, all the people on in the internet, 1.5 million small donors who really do care about this stuff. This is an offense to me. Connie in Huntington Beach, you're on with Johnny.
Hi, I'm really more than disappointed. I worked for him. I'm really an elderly lady. I'm over 65, and I worked with for him with other people in Oregon, lots of phone calls to Indiana, really, really at bake sales a couple days ago, and I couldn't believe it. I heard it on the radio, and I thought it must be some mistake.
No, I mean, what I'm hoping for, Connie, is that he hears the voices of people like you and people like me, and says, you know, this would not a bad, this is not a good idea. When push comes to shove, and when I vote, I mean, he's got an out. He can say that unless you strip the bill of the telecom immunity provision, he won't vote for it. He can say, I'm sorry. If you can't cover somebody's butt in a lawsuit with this preemptory nonsense. Because essentially what it is, the telecoms want to say, hey, you can't sue us. We were just going along with what the government wanted in a time of war. We were being good patriots. Remarkable. When the Germans at Nuremberg used that defense, they hung them anyway. I like that idea. Will, in Knoxville, Tennessee, you're on with Johnny.
Yeah, it's like pretty much every other caller. I'm really disappointed. And the thing is to me, he looks softer and he looks weaker.
Yes.
He looks like he's willing to give away our right.
Yes.
Get elected.
Yes.
And you know what? Even if he rounded up every Arab and interned them, and gave us two-way televisions a la 1984, where the government could spy on us, he'd still be considered by the Republicans soft on terror and soft on security.
Sure, sure. And there's a reason for that, Will, because that's part of how the brand is marketed. That's all that matters. And that's why he didn't have to do this. I can't speak about it in the past tense. I want him to change his mind. I'm going to send him an email. I'm going to call his office. I would suggest that we do the same if we feel strongly enough about this. And I'm going to say, look, I sent you money. I got your bumper sticker on my car. I refuse to go and say, lesser of two evils, he's better than McCain because McCain's crazy and McCain wants to keep us in Iraq for 100 years. I don't care about that stuff. I am sick of holding my nose with one hand and pulling the lever with the other. It was a pleasure chatting with you. My name is Johnny Wendell. You can see me at tbcwra@aol.com. tbcwra@aol.com. Or you can myspace.com/Johnny Wendell, and there I am. Love to hear from you. Talk to you later. Good night.